Hey, what's going on, Outlander fans? Welcome back to Bannex Bonds and Kilts. I am your host, Jenny Coco Cure. This is episode 23 of Bannex Bonds and Kilts, and we are still going back to season one and rewatching and recapping those episodes from season one. We are now up to episode 8, which is the episode entitled Both Sides Now. Both Sides Now is an episode that basically is going back and forth between the 20th century, where Frank is desperately trying to find Claire. He doesn't know what's going on. He's absolutely beside himself trying to find his wife. And then we go back and forth between him and Claire and Jamie settling into married life. Essentially, because as you well know, last week they got married. So now they're just in the early days of their marriage and they're kind of adjusting to that. And it's kind of interesting to see. Like I mentioned last week, Both Sides Now is kind of known as a sort of a fan controversial episode, at least in the Outlander fan community, because so many book readers just don't like Frank. And they have a problem with the fact that in the show, Frank is being given way more airtime than he was given in the book. In the book, Frank was, he was more of an afterthought. He really was. We did not get enough of Frank to develop any kind of attachment to him in the book. Very different on the show. Frank has, he has things to do. He is an actual character. And not just, you know, I don't know, a plot device, which is kind of what he was in the book. In the show, he's much more. And we get to bond with Frank. We get to get Frank's perspective. What's going on with Frank while his wife is in the 18th or the, yeah, the, in the 18th century getting busy with Jamie? You know, what's going on with him? So I always thought this was great, you know, interesting perspective to get Frank's side and to see what he was going through. Now, mind you, show Frank is different from book Frank. Book Frank was an asshole. Book Frank was a misogynist. Book Frank was a cheater, a philanthropist. I was finna say philanthropist. A philanderer, you know, and just not that great of a guy. Show Frank is much more well-rounded, good, decent dude. Good intentions, loved Claire very much, respected her, and was a good husband. So it's a little bit more difficult to dismiss him, as it was to dismiss the book version. So anyway, let's go ahead and get into this recap. Okay. This episode starts out with Frank in the 20th century. Poor baby. He is sitting in the police station in Inverness trying to get more information about the investigation into his missing wife. The detective shows up that morning, sees that Frank is there. He's like, oh Lord, this man is back again. He's talking to one of the cops. You know what he says? I got to tell this dude today that he just needs to give up because this has been going on for too long. We have been looking for this woman and he just don't get it. This woman is gone. So he, you know, takes a bottle out of the policeman's drawer and pours himself a little liquid courage into a teacup and takes it into his office where Frank is sitting patiently and waiting. And he goes in there, you know, it starts out friendly, you know, he's trying to be nice, going over the things that they've done so far and that there's just been no leads. And Frank is like, it would be nice if y'all would just do your damn job and find my wife. Frank is not having any of this incompetence. He is checking this guy up and down, basically trying to get him together. And the man, you know, sees the shade that Frank is throwing him and he's not happy with that. He's like, oh, okay, well, you want to be all snide and snipey. Let me just tell you what's really going on. Your wife left your ass, okay? let me just explain this to you. She ran off with a Highlander that you saw under her window that night. That motherfucker was just somebody that she knew. She lied to you, basically, saying she didn't know what that was about. That was a motherfucker that was just, you know, coming to see her. She ran off with him. So now that you know the truth, go home, because we've done all we can do. If she comes back, she comes back, you know, but that's where she's at right now. So, all right. So, you know, Frank blows up, you know, knocks the man's stuff off his desk, you know. He is not happy with that answer, and he leaves, you know, angrily. Then we switch to the 18th century, where Claire and Jamie, while poor Frank is distraught and just beside himself, Claire is enjoying a nice hillside picnic on a blanket with Jamie. And they have bread and cheese and wine, and they're just sitting there holding hands, and, you know, and just, they can't get enough of touching each other. There's just so much touching. And Jamie asks Claire, he says, "Is this usual, the way that we are feeling about each other? How I feel when you lie with me? You know, it just seems, I don't know, it just seems like this can't be normal." And Claire is like, "Well, it's kind of normal." And then she looks at him and she's like, "Nah, I'm lying. This is not normal. This is unusual. This connection we have, this is some real strong shit. I don't know what this is, but I kind of dig it." Okay, so anyway, they're getting their little flirt on, and suddenly an arrow lands near them. Like someone shot an arrow at them and it lands near them in the grass. Jamie dives on top of Claire to protect her. Tell him, "I get down." Then he's like, "Stay here." And then he gets up to check the arrow. I'm like, "What is this?" Then when he looks at it, he gives a closer look at the arrow. It's like he kind of recognizes it. So he stands up smiling like, "Hey." And then the person who shot it comes out of hiding and they start laughing. And Claire's like, "Is that a friend of yours?" And Jamie's like, "Yeah." So Claire gets up to join Jamie and this new gentleman that has appeared. And Jamie and the man are hugging it out. And then Jamie introduces them. He says, "Claire, this is Hugh Monroe. He's a friend of mine, you know." And Hugh is mute. He cannot speak. He starts signing. And, you know, Jamie understands him because, you know, they're boys, you know, so Jamie's used to the signing thing. You know, Jamie's a linguist anyway. Not only does he know French, German, English, whatever other language, Chinese, whatever other language you throw at him, he also knows sign language. So, you know, he understands what Hugh's saying perfectly. So he translates to Claire. He says to Claire, when Hugh is, you know, grunting and signing, Jamie looks at Claire and says, "Oh," he says, you know, I mean, he's essentially translating what Hugh says. Jamie tells Hugh that Claire is his new wife, that they have been married 2 whole days. And Hugh congratulates them. And then he says they should drink. He pulls out his bottle or his little leather pouch or flask. And Jamie and Claire take a drink. And then he offers them a wedding gift. He pulls out an amber rock, and he hands it to Claire. And she looks at it, and it's a dragonfly that is captured in this amber stone. And Claire is like, "Oh, this is beautiful. Thank you so much." You know. So, what happens? Oh, yeah. After they chit-chat for a bit, and Jamie kind of, you know, lets Claire know what happened to Hugh, you know, how he lost his tongue and how he was a slave for a bit in Algier, I think he said, and they were trying to convert him from Christianity to Muslimism, and they boiled his legs and they cut out his tongue. It was just a horrible, horrible time. So that's what happened to Hugh. And that's why Hugh begs now instead of working, because that's all he can do when you can't talk. After Jamie explains all that to Claire, Hugh tells Jamie why he's there, which is to give him news of this person who can possibly clear Jamie's name, because Jamie is a wanted man, as you well know. This person that Hugh has word from says that he knows the real deal, and that he knows that Jamie didn't murder anyone, and that he can clear Jamie's name. So Jamie's like, really, who is this person? And Hugh says, he holds up a couple of, he says, ha, ha, ha. And then he holds up some rocks. Ha, rocks. I like the way that came up. So anyway, so Jamie said Horrocks. Okay. All right. A guy named Horrocks, who is a red coat deserter, because apparently he would sign that much that he was a red coat deserter. And he basically said he saw the whole thing, what happened to Jamie, and that he could clear his name. So after Hugh leaves, Jamie, you know, relays all this information to Claire. And is like, if this red coat can clear my name, then I can go back to Lollybrook and take you back. And you would be the lady of Lollybrook, you know. And he says, I don't know if I can trust this dude, but I got to at least try, give it a shot, you know. So anyway, after this moment, we switch back to the 20th century, where Frank is now back at the house with Reverend Wakefield and Mrs. Graham. And Reverend Wakefield is just coming up with all kinds of crazy ideas about what could have happened to Claire. Oh, she could have been swept down the river. Oh, you never know. Did they check the river? You know, she's probably living in a cave, living on frogs and fish right now. You know, she's a survivalist. She could do that. Frank is like, really, nigga? He's not buying any of this. He's like, come on, dude. You know, this is a bit of a stretch. Okay, nobody's going to believe any of that, you know, and the police aren't interested in all these crazy wild theories, you know. So, you know, and then little Roger comes in with some snacks with Mrs. Graham, and, you know, Frank looks at the little boy, and I think it makes him feel all kind of, damn, my shot to have kids is gone. Now this bitch done left. Now I can't have no kids. Okay, guys, you have to understand, this is my hood interpretation. Try to be patient with me. Anyway, when Frank gets a little bit too much of this cuteness from little Roger and Mr. Reverend Wakefield and Mrs. Graham playing with him and teasing with him, Frank is like, okay, this is too much cuteness for me. I'm finna go out and get me a drink. So he goes out to a bar. So while he's at the bar getting nice and toasted, this lady posts up beside him at the bar, and she looks at him and she says, hey, Mr. Randall. Frank, look at her, check her up and down, and like, who is you? The lady says, my name is Sally. You can call me Sally. That's not my real name, no. He's like, okay, what can I do for you? And she's like, the Highlander that took your wife, I know where he is. Frank is like, really? And she's like, yeah, meet me at so-and-so street in another hour or so, you know. And she says, and don't be late. And she gets up and leave. He's checking her out in the mirror like, what kind of shit is this? Okay, all right, I'll meet you. So he shows up at this meeting spot. It's pouring rain. She's like, you're late. He says, I'm on time. She's like, well, I just thought you might be a little early. Shit, it's raining to hell. So... she leads him to this area of this alley, and she says, right here, you know, looking all dark and dank and rainy. So he goes over into this spot where she's directed him to, and he looks at her, and he's like, what, where, what, where is it? And then these two dudes come out and attack Frank. One of them punches him in the face and say, give us the reward, because of course Frank has a reward out for Claire, you know. I forgot how much it was, but you know, These were hard times, you know, so I guess these guys thought they was going to take this money from him. Frank wasn't having it, though. As you know, Frank is British Secret Service. He ain't no joke. So he took out this little tiny billy club out of his pocket and started wailing on the motherfuckers. He knocked one out and then started beating the shit out of the other one. The girl, the woman who led him there, started screaming for him to stop. Stop it, stop it, you're hurting him. Then he turned around and grabbed her neck, pushed her up against the wall and said, there's no Highlander, is there? Because she had told him that the Highlander that he had had on the wanted posters was that she knew where he was. And he was like, there is no Highlander, is there? And she's like, no. You know, so he lets her go and then he just kind of runs off. We switch back to the 18th century where Jamie and Claire are now at the campfire with the whole crew, you know, the whole bandwagon of Highlanders. And Rupert is telling a nice story as they sit and eat and drink around the fire. And Dougal is sitting there still pouting. Dougal is still pouting. He's not happy. You know, see, he's disgusted at Claire and Jamie because Claire and Jamie is just sickening. They are just sickening. You know, they're like me and my ex-husband was when we first got married. Just everybody just hates you. You're so in love. You can't stop touching each other. You're gazing into each other's eyes, kissing all the time, touching. You're just so in love. You're dressing alike. At least that's what we did. And they're just basically making everyone ill, particularly Dougal. Well, no, they're not making everyone ill, just Dougal. Everybody else thinks it's sweet, you know, and thinks it's nice that old Jamie's got him a woman now, but Dougal is jealous and he's pouting. So anyway, Jamie and Claire are sitting over in the corner. The other guys are sitting around the fire having them some drinks and stuff. Dougal's pouting. And Claire and Jamie are off over to the side, holding hands and gazing into each other's eyes and smooching. It's very sweet. So at one point, Jamie says to Claire that by the time we get back to Leoc, it'll be Yuletide. And Claire's like, oh, Christmas. I don't suppose you guys hang stockings by the fire. Jamie says, oh, you mean to dry them off? Claire laughs. She's like, yeah, okay. So then Jamie notices that the horses are moving and seem agitated. He looks over where the horses are. Then we see all the other guys also noticing the horses are agitated. And all of them start to very slowly, very carefully ease their weapons out of their hiding spots, wherever they are. Dougal reaches for his sword. Rupert, still telling his story, not missing a beat, pulls out his knife. And Angus is walking around the fire. He's slipping his a skindu, whatever it was. His dagger, whatever, out of its place. But they're trying to play it cool. And when Claire notices that everybody is acting weird suddenly, she's like, what's going on? Jamie says, someone's nearby. The horses are agitated. Shh, don't move. You know, so Claire's, you know, trying to be still. And then Jamie says, look, everybody else knows. You can see that everybody is aware that someone is nearby. When I tell you to run over here by this tree, I want you to run, okay? And Claire nods. So then, you know, Jamie puts his face near hers like they're kissing and stuff. And then he keeps his eyes on Dougal. And when Dougal jerks his head to the side, Jamie says, go. So Claire runs over to the tree. And then Jamie and the other guys run over to where the wagons are and attack these guys who are trying to steal their goods. The guys who come out and try to steal their stuff managed to get away with some grain and a horse and some other stuff. But for the most part, they fight them off. They get them on, they manage to fight them off and run them off. Once they have run them off, you know, Jamie makes sure Claire is okay. She's fine. And Ned, who had shot one of them, said, "Did you see that shot?" So after they get that, they start to laugh and have a light moment after that. Then I think this is when we switch back to the 20th century, where Frank is back with the Wakefields. And this is after the whole alley thing happens. And apparently he had told them what had happened. And the Reverend is like, look, you're dwelling in darkness. You need to come out. You know, the Nazis did that stuff. You don't want to do that. You don't want to be like them. You know, they drank full and deep of the cup of evil. You just taking a sip. But if you're not careful, you're going to be taking all kinds of gulps too. So you need to back away. And Frank was like, well, what would you have me do? And Reverend Wakefield said, go back to Oxford. Just go back. Move on. Like, she's apparently moved on without you. Okay, that's what you need to do. And Frank is having a hard time with this, but, you know, he takes heed of what the Reverend is saying. So then we switch back to, excuse me, coming down with a cold, guys. You'll have to pardon me if I do cough or hack. Anyway, then we switch back to the 18th century, where Claire and Jamie and all the guys are looking through the grass. It's the next morning, because this whole raid of their camp had happened that night. So the next morning, they're looking for something through the grass. And then Rupert finds the knife, apparently Claire's knife that she had lost. So he hands it to her. She's like, this knife is too big for me. So Jamie says, you need a knife, you need a weapon. Because, you know, it's dangerous out here. Everybody has to have a weapon. And Dougal suggests that she needs a skindo. And she's like, what's that? And they say a hidden knife, just a knife hidden on your person. Usually it's small and easy to access. You know, so Ned gives her his so that she can have one. But then she's, then Angus takes it upon himself to teach her how to use it. So everybody gathers around while Angus gives her a lesson in using the knife. He teaches her about stabbing someone in the chest to not get it caught in the breastplate, because then the knife will get stuck and she'll be without a knife. Then he teaches her how to stab from behind. He uses Willie as a guinea pig. And shows her how to stab underneath the last rib up into the kidney so that the person would drop like a stone. Because if she tries to stab them in the ribs, then it'll be difficult to stab in between the ribs. You know, the knife might just bounce off a rib. So you have to get under that last rib into the kidney. So Claire, you know, kind of does an example on Willie and, you know, tries to practice. And, you know, she's like, oh, okay, I got it, you know. So she has her little knife fighting lesson there. Then we go back again to the 20th century. Frank is in Claire's and his bedroom that they shared at the Wakefields. He's getting his things together. He sees Claire's bag. And he takes it and opens it up. And he goes through it and sees her things. He takes out her little journal, I think, or something. No, it's a picture frame. It's a frame of a picture of him and her. And it was the day they got married at the courthouse. And he's staring at it. Then we have another very quick flash, or very abrupt switch, back to the 18th century. Where Claire and Jamie have snuck off, and Jamie has thrown Claire on the ground and in some grass somewhere, and he's on top of her, you know, trying to get his freak on. He's kissing and, You know, he's telling her, we only have a few minutes. They think I'm just over here getting some water or something. So he's like, we just need to hurry up. And they're trying to get them a little quickie in. So, you know, they start doing the do. And, you know, Jamie is like, I feel like God himself every time I'm inside you. And he's pumping and getting it on. And he's, you know, getting into it until he hears a click of a gun behind him. And someone tells him to get up. And he gets up off of Claire. And it's two disheveled looking redcoat soldiers. And, you know, basically they are holding them up, but also they want to get them a little bit of Claire. So one of them holds a gun on Jamie while the other one attempts to take over, so to speak. And he gets down there on top of Claire, and Jamie starts to move, but the other guy has a gun on him, so he really can't do anything. His hands are in the air. Claire is looking at Jamie like, do something, nigga. But Jamie's hands are literally, you know, not literally tied, but what can he do? If he moves, the guy's going to blow his head off. Then what good would he be? So he's stuck, and Claire is looking at him, seeing that he's unable to do anything. So then she closes her eyes while this sweaty, dirty redcoat dude is on top of her getting ready to rape her. She takes her skin-do out and she stabs him just like Angus taught her, in the back, right up underneath that last rib. Stabs the shit out of him. Then she takes it out and does it again. And while his partner is up there looking shocked that she has done this, Jamie takes that opportunity to take out his dagger and slice his throat. So Jamie pulls the red coat off of Claire, takes her up in his arms, runs her up the hill away from these dirty, dirty red coat guys. So then we switch back to the 20th century, where Mrs. Graham and Reverend Wakefield are having an argument. She wants to talk to Frank about another theory that she has about what might have happened to Claire. Reverend Wakefield ain't having it. He's like, don't get that man hopes up over some nonsense, over some superstitious mess that's not even true. She's like, well, he has the right to hear it. Even if you don't believe it, he has a right to hear it. So Frank overhears them arguing, comes down and was like, this is an old house. I heard y'all, what's going on? And she's like, I have a theory of something else that might have happened to your wife. So she takes him in the kitchen and explains to him about her theory of what might have happened with the stone circle. Talking about Craig Nadun and how it's magical and how some people at certain times can travel back in time if they are there. She says, you know, your wife went up that hill. I believe that she didn't come back down, at least not in 1945. So Frank stares at her for a bit and is like, well, where would she be then? The woman's like, I don't know, you know, she somewhere else, some other place. So Frank says, okay. So he gets up. And he says to Reverend Wakefield, okay, I'm going back to Oxford today. And she was like, did you hear me? He says, yes, I heard you. I just don't share your beliefs. Sorry. So he leaves. Frank goes back to his room, gets his bag together, packs up, leaves, and leaves Claire's bag behind. So then we go back to Claire and Jamie. He's apologizing profusely about the incident. I'm so sorry. I should have checked to make sure that it was a clear area and we were safe. I should have been more careful. I'm so sorry. And Claire's like, it's okay, okay. She's in shock. And Dougal and the other guys say, they show up. They're like, Jamie, what happened? So Jamie has to leave her for a bit while he goes and explains to Dougal and all of them what had happened. And Claire is trying to calm down from her shock and everything. And Dougal and Jamie and Murtaugh discuss, you know, these redcoat deserters, you know, like these are the kind of men like this guy Horrocks that Hugh Monroe told you about. You know, this is what happens to redcoat deserters. You know, they can't be trusted. You know, you meeting this guy Horrocks could be bad news. He could be setting a trap. And Murtaugh agrees and Jamie's like, yeah, okay. So a little later, they're riding through the forest like they're getting ready to meet this guy. And Jamie tells Claire to stay with Willie. And Claire's like, I don't need to stay with Willie. Take him with you. I can protect myself as I have already shown you. Jamie's ashamed. You know, he feels bad. He feels like he failed his new wife. And it's very clear on his face. He says, well, you shouldn't have to prove it again. You know, he can't even look at her in her eyes. And Claire, she don't care. She's angry. She's feeling betrayed. She's feeling like this man did not protect her like he was supposed to have. Like he's always promised he would, you know. So anyway, Jamie leaves Claire with Willie. He makes her promise to stay there and to be there when he gets back. She promises. So he leaves with the other guys and Willie stays behind. So as Claire is walking around, you know, in the forest. I forgot. We switch back to the 20th century. And Frank is driving. He's in his car. He's in his little roadster. And he's driving down the road. And he passes Craig Nadun. And he passes it. He's looking at up the hill at the stones. And he stops and decides to back up and park. Then he walks up the hill. And as he's walking up the hill to go to the stones, Claire, while she's in the 18th century in the forest, sees the stones in the distance. She didn't realize that that's where they were until she looks off in the distance and sees the stones. She's like, oh my God, we're at Craig Nadun. We're back. So she starts thinking about Frank. She thinks about why she's mad. And she's mad because she betrayed herself. She had forgotten about what she was supposed to be doing, which was getting back to her husband. So when she sees those stones and Willie, who was supposed to be watching her, he had gone off to use the restroom. She sees her opportunity and she makes a run for it. So in this interesting scene, we switch back and forth from 20th century to 18th century, back and forth. Frank's running up the hill to the stones. Claire's running toward the stones. And it's really interesting how they set it up too, because in the 18th century, for some reason, the scene is much more vivid in color. It's like Frank's time, even though his time is in the future, in the 1940s, it's more of a sepia tone, like the atmosphere and the colors surrounding him are just dull and like not very brilliant. And in Claire's time, they're very bright. And I don't know what this is supposed to signify, if anything. I'm sure it means something. I just don't know what it is. I just found that interesting. So we have Frank running up the hill in his time toward the stones and Claire running up the hill in her time. And when Frank reaches the hill, when he reaches the standing circle, he starts calling Claire. He calls her name several times. Claire in the 18th century on the wind can kind of hear Frank as he's calling her. And when she hears it, she starts calling him. And she goes toward the main stone. And Frank, on his time, feels like he can hear her. It almost sounds like, though, to him, like it's in his head, but he still calls her, Claire, Claire. She's like, Frank, Frank. So she goes up towards the main stone. And just as she reaches for it to touch it, she is dragged away by some red coat officers. And she's like, no, no. They're dragging her off. They put her in the back of their wagon and take her away. And Frank is left standing at the stones in his time, not hearing anything anymore. He calls her a few more times. He doesn't hear anything. And then, you know, he's looking around all melancholy. And then he leaves. He goes back to his car. And he leaves. So finally, the Redcoats have captured Claire and they take her back to Fort William, which is where Black Jack Randall is held up. When she is in his office, he begins to interrogate her, asking her, why does Dougal McKenzie want to protect her so bad by adopting her into his family, into his clan? She says, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, well, you know, obviously there's something serious that he thinks you know that he wants to protect you against and prevent you from talking to me. Which is why, you know, you got married. So, Claire is like, why don't you ask the Duke of Sandringham? And, you know, Black Jack was taking a sip of wine. When she says this, he spills it all over his neckerchief, jumps up and starts to try to clean it off. He's all nervous, very clearly. Claire is like, oh, what's wrong? Aren't you aware that the Duke of Sandringham is also someone that I'm working for? Now, she's getting this information from what she remembers of what Frank and Reverend Wakefield had been discussing in front of her once, stating that Black Jack, because he was kind of notorious for doing a lot of bad stuff, and he had to have had someone high up protecting him. And Frank was the one who figured it was probably the Duke of Sandringham. So Claire just decided to take a chance and throw it at him. And apparently she hit the mark. So he's jittery, trying to clean his neckerchief or whatever, saying, what do you know about him? Do you know him? And she suggests that she's like a double agent or something. And she's working for him. And she gets all cocky, moves over there towards him. Starts to redo his neckerchief, and she's bragging about, do you think that you should take a chance of, you know, blowing my cover and revealing who I am when I'm working for the Duke as well? Or do you think that maybe you should let me continue on with my mission instead of thwarting the Duke's plans that he's, you know, doing on behalf of the king? And she says, I didn't think so. So she goes over to get her coat. She thinks she's good. She thinks she's good. She's about to leave. So Black Jack is looking at her and he's like, you mean the Duchess, on behalf of the Duchess? And Claire's like, excuse me. He's like, well, if you do business with the Duke, you're also doing business with his wife, the Duchess. And Claire's like, oh, yeah, yeah. You know, we talk on time to time. I talk to the Duchess, too. And Frank is like, oh, you do? I'm not Frank. I called him Frank. Jack is like, oh, you do? And she's like, yeah, yeah, of course I do. And he's like, oh, well, that's interesting because the Duke has never been married. So Claire's like, uh-oh. She's been caught in a lie. So she tries to run and she opens the door, but Corporal Hawkins, weak ass, is out there guarding. And he, you know, Jack is like, Corporal Hawkins, bring her ass back in here. So he brings her back in. I'm sorry, ma'am. He's such a weak, sniveling, spineless nothing. So anyway, he brings her back in. Black Jack, he gets a rope out of his desk, ties her hands behind her back. He says to Corporal Hawkins, no matter what you hear, don't come back in here. Get out. So Corporal Hawkins leaves. Black Jack gets his knife out. He starts to cut her bodice open, rips her blouse down the front, tells her, tell me everything you know about the Jacobites. Start talking. And she's like, you're going to regret this. He's like, I don't think so. He takes her over to the desk, throws her on it, pulls up her skirt. This is really disturbing, by the way, when he pulls her skirt up in the back and exposes her behind like he's getting ready to rape her. Then when he does that, he sees her little skin dude tucked in her boot. He takes it out. He's like, oh, okay, you got claws, huh? He takes it and puts it up to one of her nipples, her breasts, like he's going to cut the nipple off, and says, how sharp are your claws? You know, and just when he's getting ready to probably do some really serious damage to this woman, the window busts open and Jamie is sitting there on the ledge with a gun aimed right at Black Jack. And he says, I'll thank you kindly to take your hands off my wife. Infamous line there. When Black Jack sees him and recognizes him, he's like, oh my God. And he starts to laugh. He thinks this is just amazing. So the episode ends right there. And that is the end of Both Sides Now, guys. Like I said, I love this episode. A lot of people, like I said, did not like that Frank has such a huge storyline in this episode. But I found it interesting. I found it interesting to get Frank's perspective. I always, when I read Outlander, I always wondered, what was Frank doing? How was he handling the fact that his wife disappeared? We never got that in the book. We just had to assume that Frank was frantic maybe for a while and then moved on with his life after a period. We had no storyline at all to explain how Frank was dealing with the disappearance of his wife. You know, basically after Claire went to the 18th century, it all just followed her in the 18th century. We just didn't know what was going on with Frank. Also, though, this in the book, this is strictly Claire's narrative. We only get Claire's narrative. So everything that happens in the book is always happening from Claire's point of view. It is never happening from anyone else's because she's the narrator. Okay, so if something is going on with another character, we just don't know. If she's not in the room with that character, we don't know what's going on with them. We never get Jamie's POV. We get only Claire's point of view. That's just how the book is written. So this, like I said, this was an interesting storyline. I thought they did a great job with it. I thought the cinematography was great. It was just a great, great show, great episode. All right, guys, that's it for this week. Next week, guys, we are going to be recapping the 9th episode of Outlander, which is going to be The Reckoning. Now, if you guys remember when these shows initially aired, Both Sides Now was the season or the mid-season finale. Okay, and then we had a little bit of a break. I think the mid-season finale was in, let me just verify. The mid-season finale was in September of 2014, and then we had to wait until April of 2015 for it to pick back up. with the second half of season one. That's like, I think, what is that, 7 months? That is 7 months. So we had to wait more than half a year for this second half of the season to pick up. But, you know, so we just, for 7 months, we just left Jamie sitting in that window, pointing a gun at Jack, Black Jack. But we pick up with season nine at the beginning of the mid-season break. You know, at the second half of the mid-season break of season one. And that is The Reckoning. Now, in The Reckoning, I believe, of course, we pick up with Jamie and what happens. Does he rescue Claire? Does he get her? Do they get away? You know, and what happens after that? How do they handle the fact that Claire basically got herself captured by taking her ass away from Willie and running toward those damn stones and being exposed and screaming all over the place and basically just attracting the Red Coast to her? So how does Jamie handle this? We will cover that in next week's episode. Until then, take care, guys. Have a good week. Thank you for listening. I'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.